We'll start the show in just a minute, but first, a word from our premier brand sponsor, CasaGo, and co-sponsors Guest Ranger and Good Neighbor Tech.
CasaGo's founder, Steve Schwab, has been quoted as saying, "You can only be a local in one place." This simple yet profound statement is the basis of CasaGo's franchise model, which allows locally owned vacation rental management companies the ability to compete at a national level by leveraging the systems, software, and support, the buying power of a much larger organization.
As a CasaGo franchisee, you have the freedom to run your business with the support of a community of like-minded professionals while leveraging the economies of scale and buying power to increase profitability and reduce operating costs.
Guest Ranger is the premier guest screening and chargeback protection solution. Leveraging AI, their tool effectively detects fraudulent activity, fake IDs, and underage guests, while also performing comprehensive dynamic background checks. With Guest Ranger, businesses can rest assured that their customers are safe and secure.
Good Neighbor Tech allows you to manage your properties remotely and intelligently, protecting your owners and your guests. Their smart Wi-Fi locks allow you to provide temporary access to home and garage from anywhere and keep track of when guests and service providers are in the property. Good Neighbor Tech provides the ability for you to collect email addresses from all guests staying in a property, not just the one who booked the reservation. Every guest who connects to the internet will see your branded welcome page and be prompted to provide their email address in order to connect to the Wi-Fi.
Visit CasaGo.com/franchise, GuestRanger.com, and GoodNeighborTech.com for more information.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. With more than 35 years combined industry experience, Alex Huesner and Annie Holcomb have teamed up to connect the dots between inspiration and opportunity, seeking to find the one story, idea, strategy, or decision that led to their guests' big aha moment. Join them as they highlight the real stories behind the people and brands that have built vacation rentals into the $100 billion industry it is today. And now, it's time to get real and have some fun with your hosts, Alex and Annie.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. I'm Alex.
And I'm Annie.
And we are back today for the August 1st, first of the month bonus episode starring none other than Simon Lehman. Simon, it's so good to see you.
Hi, ladies. Hi, Alex and Annie. It's great to be here. I'm based in a vacation right now.
Yeah. I love it. You're coming to us from Spain, which is amazing.
Absolutely. You see the beautiful background of Alicante Beach on the Costa Blanca. And I'm currently with my family in Spain and enjoying the super brutal heat and the beautiful food of Spain.
Very jealous.
Yeah. We're still just back here in South Carolina and Florida, working our tails off, but we're glad to see you.
And just as hot, but not enjoying the scenery.
Exactly. So Simon, we wanted to have you back today. You were most recently on the show for our May 1st of the month and have been on several firsts of the months over the past year to give your update on things that you're seeing from your side of the world as far as travel and the economy is going. And we last saw you at the VRMA Executive Summit, which also was in May. And I think you gave some pretty accurate depictions on where things are going. But let's just start with that. Where do you think what has summer travel shown us so far? What has 2023 shown us so far? And what is the landscape that we're all in right now?
Absolutely. I think all over, and this is not a very direct answer, but the picture is very blurry. And once again, we can obviously not generalize when we look at destinations and travel behavior, et cetera, et cetera. Some are benefiting, some are suffering, some markets are softening, some markets are reasonably solid, others are going back to 2019 levels. Interesting enough, just today, there was something published that there's a news announcement in the Swiss television today that the hottest destination in Switzerland is the United States. So this is quite interesting to see. And when you look at the airfares, we have seen prices on the airfares we've seen today, we have not seen in the last 4 or 5 years. It's unbelievable. The airfares have gone to levels which is incredible, which obviously paints a certain picture. Airlines are not back to full capacity, whereas the demand is high, so they can afford a lot higher rates. And the business class fares, I'm traveling to the States in the beginning of August, and I looked at the fares on economy and business class fares. I've never seen prices like that before. For the climate, it's great if people travel less, but at the end of the day, we also look at the travel overall. And I think we have seen different behaviors in terms of the way people consume travel and where they travel. I think what I'm seeing is that there's a big spike in 23 for international travel.
Yes.
I believe in 24, we'll go back to more domestic demand again, because interest rates are rising, cost of living is increasing. Mm-hmm. Let's not use the word recession here right now, but obviously European Central Bank just raised another quarter today. It has not stopped with increasing interest rates, and that will hurt the pockets of the travelers. And at the moment, they still seem to be pretty confident they want to get out there. There's still pent-up demand from the past. But I think 23 is going to be the peak also from international travel standpoint. And then we will see different travel behavior in 24 and going forward.
You guys are going through what we went through last year in the US, where everybody was able to get out of the country and go to Europe. And now you guys are coming over here. But I think it's interesting. Back in May, we talked about like this bubble that was like coming up to the surface and what that meant for the industry. And I think we talked about it last fall, like where things were going to get back to reality. And people just needed to stop being blind to all the signs that were coming down the road in terms of like rates and demand. And again, don't want to use the word recession, but in that, guys, like, there were just things that were coming that we all saw happening. And so I think it's interesting to see where we are. And there's been a lot of chatter around Airbnb and where they are in terms of their business model. And they're recognizing the signs, and some of their messaging now has gone back to their roots and gone back to where they were, the individual single room, sharing a room in a home. And so I'd like your thoughts around that topic. I know there's been a lot of fervor around some data that was shared around the bubble. And I don't think that everybody's seeing it the same level, but it would be interesting from your perspective, because you do have a global watch on it.
Yeah, great point, Annie. And we're not saying Phoenix is down by 48%. That was a Twitter stunt that worked very well for that particular individual, but obviously it raised the topic. But at the end of the day, the fact of the matter is the market has softened, right? Yeah. So obviously not to the extent that it was published. That brought the conversation of data back into the scheme of things, which I enjoyed. So we contacted all the data providers around that. We enjoy a very good relationship with Key Data and Transparent and AirDNA, and also all the rooms. And data is still, it just shows how data still remains extremely important. But at the same time, data is data and can be interpreted differently on one side, and then the sources are different, and that gives different results. So that's an agenda that I want to push at the Durham conference in Nashville a lot, because, and we've already been in touch with all the data providers. We need to get on top of that, because these type of messages can be very hurtful for the industry. But having said that, it remains clear, and going back to my message in May, is that if you look at the macroeconomical situation, either in the US or also in Europe, where interest rates are rising and cost of capital is increasing, that makes short-term rental less attractive for investors. It's very simple. And when the demand softens, you have a double whammy. You have less demand, lower ADR, lower occupancy, but higher cost of rent. That means it becomes less attractive. And that's something that I've been talking about basically from day one. I've talked about this since Master Lease came into the industry. We remember Lyric, Day Alfred, Domio, Sonder, who did lease arbitrage. When people asked me what's happening to that business, is that working, is that not? I said, the biggest risk to that business is going to be increased cost of capital, okay? Because they pay upfront rent and then get returns from it. Obviously, I didn't have the pandemic on my radar, but radar killed them. Yeah. Radar killed the lease arbitrage business. Now it's coming back. And then everybody felt, hey, this is gold mining time. I can buy a place, do it up. We have Airbnb podcasts and forums all over the world talking about how you become a $1 million host. But at the end of the day, this is a gamble on low cost of capital. Now, cost of capital has increased tremendously. And it's interesting that Airbnb announced their move to go back to their basics, or to their core, very softly in a way, but it's actually obvious. That means cost of capital is raising, and people who have just bought property to throw it on Airbnb's channel to create a better business and long-term rent is now obviously decreasing. So this is a massive opportunity for professional managers to gain more properties professionally managed for homeowners who have good assets to be looked after. And I think the Airbnb market, if you wish, that bubble, that for me, I believe that has burst.
I agree.
It's a strong statement, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, I agree. And there's so much in what you just said that we've talked about on this show recently. And just really looking even in our local markets, the interest rates they're so high. And if you wanted to sell your house right now, if you bought a few years ago at 3.5%, now you're looking at 7% to buy something else, you're just not going to do it. So everything has slowed down. The people that have bought these properties, they're not getting the rents that they had expected. And this passive income business just isn't exactly what they had thought it was going to be. I was just talking to somebody the other day and looking at how the demographics change and people that are traveling and booking on these sites. Airbnb is always trended more towards millennials and younger travelers. And if you look at in a lot of areas, it's where we're missing travelers right now. A lot of them is that demographic. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that, of if you're hearing that from overseas as well, and what the impact that would be long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I comment on that, Alex, allow me to make a quick other example. This week I had a call with one of our customers in Colorado Springs, just in regards to supply. We've seen property managers popping up in second and third tier markets who have benefited tremendously from COVID, where people wanted to travel, but also in cheaper destinations. And therefore, the supply grew as well because people bought properties in second and third tier markets. Mm-hmm. And he told me that their churn rate is something that I have never seen before, which means a lot of owners are now selling their properties because the demand for second and third tier markets are not the same anymore than what they used to be. So therefore, they're selling their properties. That's happening. We need to accept that fact. We've seen numbers on Joshua Tree. We've seen numbers on other markets. They're not looking fantastic. So we're going back to basics. We're going back to 2019 in a lot of markets. Coming back to your question in relation to who is traveling, and absolutely, as cost of living raises, the millennials need to think about, where do I spend my money? How do I spend my money? Mm-hmm. And what can I get for my money as well? And I think being more cost conscious in how to travel, where to travel, and everything else is having a direct impact in how you consume hospitality. And there's no doubt, I felt it even ourselves. We haven't been in Spain for 2 years as a family. And I was amazed, like, how much cost of living and cost of food and restaurants and everything else, and within the 2 years we haven't been here, has increased. And that raises anybody's questions to its own wallet. And we've seen posts on LinkedIn about saying, have you been to Europe lately? I've just seen a recent post that Carl Shepard has commented as well and say, hey, this has become crazy expensive. Yeah. And I think that that will impact the people in how they consume their travel. And it's going to be interesting to figure out how does that, like, what's the result of that? Where are they going to go?
Yeah, the cost of rent for apartments or just leasing anything right now is crazy. And obviously salaries have not increased to get to that point. So yeah, definitely an issue for sure.
Yeah. And I know one thing, that the cost factor that I think a lot of people didn't take into, like, factor in, I always am keenly aware of it because I live in a state that is affected by hurricanes every year, is insurance. And we've been losing insurers weekly. They've been leaving the state, and I've been isolated from it until this week, found out that mine is not going to get renewed and I have to find a new homeowner's insurance. And because there's so few options, it's increasing. And one of the things that I recall from the last real estate bubble is that insurance got so high because of foreclosures and things like that, people walking away from their properties because, again, they bought at the height, weren't planning, weren't professionalized, weren't thinking about the long-term ramifications of owning and managing a property. But you have a situation where now people just can't afford the insurance. So they're going to be underinsured or not insured. They can't buy a home because the insurance is so cost prohibitive. And within the vacation rental industry, specifically like in condos, Orlando areas, the reserves that were set aside are have been depleted over time because, again, they've had storms, they've had issues, they're paying for repairs, they're paying for just the common upkeep of a building, but now you factor in insurance. And there's just no way that cost ultimately will get passed along to the consumer. And it just makes the cost of travel, regardless of where you go, there's something at play here. So I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know if there is an answer, but it's just certainly something that we have to be mindful of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great point you're raising here. And ultimately, you're raising the point of our climate crisis. The fact of the matter is we have a climate crisis. If we accept it or not, it's a big debate. I am definitely, certainly 100% assured that we are having massive issues and they're not going to get better. So that's related to insurance and they're related to other aspects. Insurance is definitely one. So I'm not saying that's going to get better. We have seen natural disasters we have never seen before. We have issues. The global warming is a fact. I'm in Spain. It's like a toaster outside. There's no water. Things are, we've seen Rhodos on fire. I can give you 10 natural disasters in the last week that are unprecedented. So it's a fact. And therefore, the issue with insurance is only going to increase. Today, we talked about regulatory issues, and we have a lot of people who are fighting advocacy, which is fantastic, supporting advocacy, making a lot of inroads in getting regulations. We've seen that Portugal have come to sense as well, which is great news, that Portugal has now definitely better laws than what we anticipated for. But there's many different aspects. And I think the natural impact and the disaster on climate crisis is only going to get bigger and bigger. And that is an interesting effect now also that insurance companies are pulling out. In Europe, we haven't seen that yet, that they wouldn't be covering properties in certain high-risk areas or increase premiums extremely.
Because you guys don't get hurricanes quite like we do.
We don't have hurricanes, but we have bushfires, we have droughts, we have earthquakes, we have massive floods. We have seen floods like we have never seen before in certain areas of north of Italy and France and everything else. So I think this is something we need to get our heads around, also as owners and also as property managers. And we want to do a lot more on that area in terms of global warming and what can we do as property managers to improve sustainability of the product that we're offering. It's always said that our consumers want more sustainable products. It's actually quite interesting, just coming back from a two-week vacation rental myself, and I still get these small plastic bottles for soap, which will cover half of my family for one shower, right? It's just ridiculous, right? So we need to, and I believe we as an industry, we have a lot of impact. Might be small, but every impact helps.
Every bit counts.
So there's no excuse.
Yep. Very true. So what do you think, Simon, what does this all mean for companies that have been thinking about selling? We talked about that with you back in May, and I've heard more that starting the year and about March, ones that were teetering on it, now they're starting to be more interested in pursuing that before things would potentially get worse. But what are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Yeah, great question, Alex. And it's interesting what you're saying, because I can only support exactly that statement, right? We've seen an incredible couple of years. Everybody was pretty bullish. And then all of a sudden, the demand for acquisition dropped. And then everybody, like the M&A market, basically dropped to zero transactions. And we felt that ourselves as well, obviously. And now it's exactly happening the opposite. So now I can literally say, if I'm allowed to make a small sales statement on our side, but we're on the European M&A side, we're fully booked till the end of the year. We have so many portfolios now for sale, which is great. And we're doing our best, because now people, for exactly the purpose or the reason that you mentioned, Alex, that people think about, okay, we've seen incredible years. They see it's going to be tough. I've spoken to an Australian property manager yesterday, and he said, hey, we're going to put down our hatches for 2 years. We are securing X amount of millions in operating cash to weather the storm for the next 24 months. Okay. That's a statement. And he's been in the business for a long time. He's one of the most respected people in the Australian market. And he said, look, Simon, we are in for a storm here. So we're going to put down the hatches and we're not going to increase. We're not going to do spending. We just run the business the way we have. We reduce our operating costs and we want to wear the storm for 2 years. And we need X amount of operating cash. So this means on an M&A side, you either say now it's a great time to get out because it's obviously good for consolidation. Because there's still buyers out there, without a doubt, or you're going to weather the storm. So at the end of the day, for me, it's a question, you want to see better times, so you're going to be in it for another 2 or 3 years to have this conversation, or you might as well take what you have and say, now it's a good time to buy. This doesn't mean, of course, the prices that we have seen or the multiples we have seen are going to potentially drop to a certain extent, but you still have buyers who now see opportunities in being more aggressive in the market to consolidate, which potentially fuels what they're willing to pay and see opportunities within 2 years to grow the business again. So I think that dynamic between March, what you said, and now has just flipped. We're seeing more on the M&A side, actually. Like I thought our July is going to be a very quiet month. It's crazy.
There's a lot of opportunity. I think that's the nice thing with some of these ebbs and flows is it flips the opportunity. But for our industry, it allows, I feel, it's going to allow us to get back to that focus on professionalization, because a lot of these people that got in it didn't get in it with any mindset to really be professional. And I heard a term this week that it's a Lauren Madewell term, but it's about the people that got into the business thinking that they were just going to be able to like put a unit on Airbnb and become a millionaire. And it was passive myassive is what she coined it as, but it's true. And again, I think it's an opportunity for us to use the voice that we have gained traction with from COVID and get back together to say, again, we have to do something about climate change. We have to do something about professionalization. We have to do something about all of these things. And now it's like a meeting of all of a convergence, if you will, of all of these factors coming together that I hope at VRMA and at DARM, we're going to be able to really elevate these parts of the industry to have a deeper conversation to make change.
Alex and we all sound, and I love what you guys are doing, and we've known each other for a long time. We sound like a broken record, but that's exactly what it's all about. And now we're coming out of the heydays, and now we're starting to realize again, I was being accused of staying on the stage of VRMA Executive with an umbrella in my hand for whatever reasons. But ultimately, I can only say I was right. We were right to see what's going to happen. I'm sorry to say. I've provoked this. I refuse, like when we do consulting mandates, we are not allowing our customers to use the word Airbnb in the conversation, just as a game to see that this is not what we are in the industry. And with your statement, Annie, you get me going. We can have another 2 hours on this because that's what we need to be mindful about, because we're coming back to the roots now. The heydays are over. The market is reshaping. Flexible living, all these things are definitely evolving without a doubt. And hotels are still looking at our space. That's all great and dandy. But this is now the chance that we can get rid of the crap, professionalize property management companies. That's what AGL is all about. We want to professionalize this industry and have the best practices. And trust me, there's still a lot of work to do. And I think the entry barrier to come into our industry has been far too low and will remain very low, with the exception of regulations. And now a certain demand will supply will probably disappear from the market. Now it's a chance for professional property managers to get the game. And I want to close this statement quickly with the entrance speech at the VRMA Executive from Jason Sprenkel when he presented the data. He said, and I repeated that on LinkedIn many times the last couple of months, if you don't have good relations to homeowners today,
There'll be somebody else's tomorrow. Yeah, exactly. That's so true. Simon, I think you might have had probably a just as successful, maybe even more career as a weatherman, because you've been quite
very good at predicting.
Yeah, much better than most of them. I think they're only right probably 40% of the time, but you're definitely skewing higher than that at this point. But I'd also like to get your thoughts on, you mentioned the barrier of entry to get into the industry. Yes, that is true. But I think that is getting higher and higher. And I say that just putting your property in Airbnb isn't just the way to do this anymore. So for companies that obviously were big into the book direct movement, and I've always been part of companies that really believe in that, but how much is that going to play into the professional hosts getting inventory back that they've lost over the last few years, being able to show that they do other things besides just Vrbo and Airbnb? Do you see that being a big part of this?
Yeah, Alex, massive. And I love that. And most of the conversations that I'm currently having as a consultant is homeowner facing, right?
Yeah.
You remember the technology landscape that we have published with 420 companies? There's not a single one homeowner facing out of 420 tech companies. And to the point that I just made with Jason Sprinkle, we need to focus on homeowners, and supply is going to be the key going forward. And that requires transparency and total honesty and transparency towards homeowners. Have been educated through the Airbnb wave. They know what's possible. Mm-hmm. They know what's not possible. And one thing that I've said for 6 years running AGL is we have not been good enough to communicate our value proposition to homeowners and as property managers. And now it's the time to do that. We need to clearly show what we do for homeowners to run their properties, what we deal with, cleaning, maintenance, guest communication, et cetera, and be totally transparent in terms of what the fees are we're getting into, what we pay out, what we get in, and not trying to hide fees from homeowners, et cetera. So I think that's exactly where the industry needs to go now. And interesting enough, I have not seen more movement on the homeowner side in technology than I have seen today. I'm currently in conversation with about 4 different tech companies who have built phenomenal homeowner portals to put full transparency towards homeowner, including real estate prices in their regions, including performance in their regions in terms of sales price and revenue, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's exactly the way we need to do it. We need to get rid of the crap. Homeowners are part of the game. We need to find their trust and be 100% honest and transparent to them so we can create loyalty, because at the end of the day, we build still a business on trust with homeowners. So this is a great point that you've raised here, and I'm advocating for 100% transparency and building a relationship with homeowners that are going to last, even through tough times, because as we all know, homeowners have been spoiled the last 2 years in terms of revenue and ADRs and everything else. They want to see that come back. So they might shop around. And now it's time for total transparency to create these loyal relationships with homeowners so they stick with you. And therefore, we need to do more on the education side to tell homeowners what property management is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all about knowing all of your customers and taking care of all of your customers, whether they be the customer that's renting the unit or the customer that's giving you the unit. There has to be that relationship. And again, it goes back to something I know Chris Maughan talks about a lot with his IPRAC organization, is just trust. We have to have trust, full circle, and trust doesn't happen without transparency. So you're spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we still have a way to go. Even from my own experience, I've just stayed in the property for 2 weeks. Was not a good experience once again. And a very established property management company, they didn't do an onboarding process well. We didn't even have a hairdryer or any cleaning materials in the property, which we had to then demand. They were super responsive. So it's still the basics. And that's something we've talked about for so long, right? But homeowners need to know what it's there. One thing to talk about this quickly is, if you're a property manager of 400 units, you're managing 400 castle of 400 individuals, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the individual, he has only one castle and he gives that to you. So when do you give him the attention to manage his castle while you're managing 400 castles? And if you think about this, when the owner is in town, you need to give him all the attention.
All the attention,
you need to get the attention to somebody else. So So yeah. You cannot manage 400 kings and queens at the same time, giving you 400 castles, because you need to, because that's, we need to be able to tell that our homeowners, we right. can't manage 400 castles at the same time, because we, I know it's your castle and you worked hard for it and you bought it when you were 60 and you're so proud that you have now this beautiful home that you're renting out, but we have 400 of those. So yeah. we just need to get out of that and make that very clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know one thing that we do at Homes and Villas, and I'm very proud of, is the way we onboard our accounts and what we go through to talk about the level of service and the expectation that the guest has, and really do a deep dive with each property management group to understand what their operations and where maybe their shortcomings are. And mm-hmm. I think that if more organizations were mindful of that, there would be less friction on the back end when someone checks out, or even when they arrive. Again, if we just had the basics in play and the understanding that everybody wants the same level of service. There are going to be some that are way more demanding and some of them that just don't care, but that those basics just need to be met. And so I think from what Homes and Villas by Marriott Bonvoy is doing is that we're focused on, again, trying to make sure that there is the basics in play, that the customer service is there, that they are taken care of. And if you as a manager can't provide that, then that's not a manager that we want to work with. But what does that say about your operation? You probably want to elevate that, because the guy that owns a castle likely wants his unit to be in front of somebody who's a Marriott guest. Like there is all of these things that if we all work together to just get those basics in play. I am very driven this year. My like mantra for next year going into is education. We've just got yeah. to educate people, but we have to show that, we have to take them to the well. We can't force them to drink, but we just mm-hmm. got to get them there and show them where the information is, and it'll weed itself out eventually.
And what's going to be interesting from a homeowner perspective, I do believe that this is going to be a great year for everybody to pick up inventory of what has been yeah. bought and is just not doing well yeah. this year. But yeah. I wonder though, how are those homeowners going to be? Either the ones that left and came back or ones that are new to it. It's going to be a different shift for the professional companies that are used to homeowners that, you know, these are in a lot of these tourist destinations, they've owned these properties for a very long time. And it's more than just an investment property to them. The different type of homeowner clients, I think, could be interesting to follow what that trend is. And we're all going to have to adapt. And at the end of the day, your best customer is the one that's right in front of you. It's the one that you have. So how do we keep them happy? How do we keep them from not searching somewhere else? Simon, I think you said it perfectly, that when they're in town, you got to talk to them, make sure that they know how important they are to you. I know anybody who followed me when I first moved to Costco and went to Costco University, the condo I stayed in, they decorated the whole glass on the condo specifically for actually our podcast. They drew yeah. this beautiful drawing of our Alex and Annie logo on the window. And everybody said, I can't believe they did that. Did they do that just for you? They didn't do it just for me. They do that whenever a homeowner comes into town or any kind of a VIP or a staff member. So doing things like that, being able to go above and beyond, and it's not easy to scale, but between now and the next few months, this is probably a good time to be thinking about those types of things of how you can push the level up a bit.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And it's an interesting aspect that you guys are raising also in terms of generation shift. So in Europe, we've seen massive generation shift from the baby boomers now inheriting their houses to the next generation, which then became more an Airbnb generation. This was very interesting what we saw, because we had homeowners who were with us at my previous property management company I worked with. They were with us for 30 years. And yep. then they inherited the houses to the youngsters. And it's like, why do we pay a property manager 30% right. commission?
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
total bullshit. We'll just throw it on Airbnb, get it over and done with.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was a big awakening. Who takes care of the maintenance, the cleaning, the guest complaints and everything
yeah.
else?
Yeah.
And I'm totally with you, Alex. I think this is exactly what we're going to see again with the new homeowners as well. And
yeah.
I believe, to be perfectly honest to you, this is a big chance to say that now, so let's, from the baby boomers to the next gen, to that gen that you're talking about, I think this is a massive opportunity that people go back to say, hey, just take it off my hands,
yeah.
make the most of it, be competitive. And that's, but people need to have an understanding. Exactly. The worst thing for me is go to a U.S. supermarket because I stand in front of 4,000 cereals, different brands.
We like nightmare. Our choices.
I love U.S. supermarkets. But when I see 4,000 different cereals for breakfast, I struggle. So we need to be very clear in what we do to our homeowners and what are we going to get. And I think this is a massive chance that you raised, Alex, that we are now lifting that game. And guys, we're going to take everything off your hand and we're going to take care of this. And this is going to cost you X and everything is fine. And we're still not there. And I think if we can make this happen and be transparent and honest and get rid of the crap, you know, bad properties do not help our industry. So we need to be selective. And I think then we have a great basis. And this is the current slowdown, softening of the current market environment is a massive opportunity for the professional property management companies.
Agree 1,000%. Yeah. And I feel like like you said a little while ago, we're a broken record we've been saying this for so long. We saw it coming, but I know we've been through it before. It's not it's not surprising. We've been through it before, but the opportunity to come together as a unified voice and message and just really do all the things that we know need to be done. It's sitting right in front of us. We just have to take the opportunity. But on that, since we're getting close to wrapping up this first of the month, Simon, where do you see the rest of this year going? We're getting ready to go into show season. We've got Amy Highnote came back, so we're super excited to be able to have Darm this year. But we've got VRMA International. There's a couple of other shows in Europe that are taking place. What do you think the message is going forward for the remainder of the back half of the year?
Cautious, being smart, listening out, attending conferences, I think is something that is good money well spent. Networking, talk to people and see what else is happening. We've seen so many different messages. We spoke to France property managers, domestic market is soft. We speak to American property managers. We see different dynamics across the globe. I think now it's time to network, be together, support each other and share as much as you can. For my own interests, I'm going to moderate Darm. So I'm obviously looking very much
forward to that. Are you? We didn't know that.
Yay. Breaking news.
And still in conversation with Amy, but I'm sure we make ends meet. But yeah, that's the idea that I'm going to be the MC of Darm. And I'm being very selective this year. On the other news, I'm not going to be at VRMA International this year. Because I'm going to go to Australia instead at the Astra conference, which is another big news that I can just basically announce today. Because Astra, the Australian Associations, I'm going to Sydney, and therefore VRMA International is not happening. Unfortunately, our speaking requests have not been accepted. I put one in on global warming and natural crisis. And which is very unfortunate, but obviously the RMA has its own decision in terms of selecting topics. But now it's time to gather. We have not seen more conferences on the second half of this year. I'm going to go to Cancun. I'm moderating Croatia. I'm going to Australia. I'm doing VRMWS in Barcelona. I'm doing Darm conference. So it's time to really exchange, talk to peers, exchange what you have seen, exchange your experiences, your numbers, and get help and support, because I believe the next 18 to 24 months are definitely going to be not what we have seen in the last 48 months.
More realistic.
Maybe we'll have you on the show to do the global warming conversation. That'll be the next first of the month episode. Yeah. I do want to hear about it.
I've been on the board of the largest carbon offset foundation in Switzerland for 8 years. Wow. So we're supporting, I have a very deep knowledge on carbon offsetting, carbon calculation, carbon footprint calculation. We're supporting projects across the world. We do biogas projects in India. We do projects in Africa. So I'm extremely familiar with this topic. We've already had some conversations on that ourselves. And that's definitely something I'm going to push very hard. And there's some initiatives by Damien Sheridan to put a green conference up, which definitely we at AGL are going to support as well.
Yeah, great. All great topics today, Simon. This was a wonderful conversation, and we're excited to have you back for another first of the month here soon. But until next time, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach out?
Absolutely. Thanks, ladies. It was awesome, as always. The best way is to find me at Simon Lehman, L-E-H-M-N, on LinkedIn, or simon.lehman@ajatelier.com. where you can find me as the direct email address.
Excellent. We will include that contact information in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, we'd love to hear from you. If you can leave us a review on Google or Spotify or Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts, and you can go to alexandanniepodcast.com to get in touch with us. Simon, thank you again, and we'll see everybody next time.